Hello and welcome to Jason and Jeremy John About Justice League. I'm Jason.
And I'm Jeremy.
Oh, I love that. He did a dramatic pause. This is the podcast, everybody, where two friends who are also nerds talk about each episode of Justice League, the animated series. We give you our thoughts, insights, and a lot of nerdy tangents on a cartoon about DC superheroes. And if you want to support this podcast or submit questions for us to answer live on the air, head on over to patreon.com/Jawin. That's J-A-W-I-I-N. So like the question that's going to be answered in this first episode of Justice League, of who is the Justice League, Jeremy, I think we need to say to the people who we are, because they might be coming to this blind. They might not have any clue who we are.
Yeah, that's absolutely fair.
Wasn't it really a question? That's unfair of me to put you on the spot for that one. I'm sorry.
I agree.
I will say, everybody out there, if you're listening to this podcast, it's probably because you've maybe heard me on another podcast, most famously Geek History Lesson, that I co-host with the amazing Ashley Victoria Robinson. You might also have recognized my face from DC All Access. I hosted the official DC Comics YouTube show for about 2.5 years. And for the last 2 years, I've been working in a writer's room on a CBS television show, one that I can't talk about. But those are a little bit my bony fides, and I've always been a big nerd, and I, you know, loved especially the DC Comics universe for a very, very long time, and it's led me to even write comic books myself. So if you're wondering who is this loudmouth, you know, I don't know, those are bona fides, right? I don't know what I'm trying to...
Oh, 100%.
I don't know who I'm
You're
trying
qualified.
To... You're qualified. I don't know who I'm trying to... What invisible judge I'm trying to prove my worth to.
Yeah, I feel like these people are mostly your people anyway. I feel like I'm the one who's got some proving to do.
Well, I will tell you, Jeremy, let's talk about a little bit of your bona fides. Like, you know, you have one of the most astounding DC Comics action figure collections I have ever seen, that I've ever known about. I love seeing pictures of it and stuff like that. And when did you first start reading DC Comics?
So the first DC comic I ever read was The Death of Superman.
Oh, same. Well, no, not
like,
same.
Like,
that was the one that got me into it.
Yes.
Same, but not.
And I wasn't reading those like weekly as that happened. I got the graphic novel for Christmas the year that it was released.
Who gave it to you?
So,
Christmas?
My parents.
Oh,
my
good.
Parents gave it to me. But that was really only a part of it. I would say a larger part of my formative comic book experience was the Batman 66 TV show.
Oh, yeah.
That aired on Nick at Night. I watched the reruns of that when I was very little, and that fostered my love for Batman. And then shortly after I started watching that, the animated series premiered. So those three things
the
were
Batman,
kind of
the animated series, you mean?
My linchpin. Batman, the animated
yeah,
series.
Okay.
Yes, correct. So those three things are kind of the linchpin to my DC experience.
Do you mind, Jeremy, if we reveal your rock music legacy history here? Can we talk a little bit about your connection to rock music?
I mean, rock is maybe a strong word.
Okay, red dirt,
my
rock country?
Yeah, my dad is one of the so-called godfathers of red dirt music.
Yeah, that's some bona fides.
I mean, not in terms of Justice League, but absolutely.
There's a lot of red dirt in this episode, though, Jeremy.
There is a whole lot of red dirt in this episode, and I didn't even come at it from that angle.
Right at the beginning of episode one, should we start a red dirt segment? I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there, everybody.
We shouldn't.
If you're
interested in learning about red dirt, reach out to me online. I will direct you to some red dirt podcasts done by people I know that are really great. So
Jeremy, we should probably tell the story about why the two of us, like, how did we meet? Why the two of us? Why are we talking about Justice League? Two J-named idiots.
Well, I'll tell it from my perspective. So I was going to the University of Tulsa, which I'm very happy I did, even though it was a mistake for me on a lot of levels. I shouldn't have done it. I went there for a year and I dropped out and moved away. And you, I guess, had started attending TU right after I left, like the semester after I left. And you kind of replaced me in our friend group.
Yeah, so we should explain that because we had a group of four guys. It was.
Yeah.
But at the time it was three. And then, like, I guess I didn't, when I started talking to the other two gentlemen, I had no idea that there was a Mr. Jeremy Skinner out there.
Yeah. And I you were explicitly, you know, I was told about you beforehand and like, oh yeah, he's the new you since you left.
Man, I never knew that. Those guys, that's rough. Yeah.
So I was very like apprehensive about meeting you. I was threatened by you before I ever laid eyes on you.
We have a Batman Superman relationship.
we kind of do. And because I guess what? I don't talk to either of those dudes anymore and you're still my best friend.
I don't either.
That worked out.
I don't either. I see one of them on Instagram every once in a while. So yes, we have a long friendship. I'm sorry, Batman. I didn't know about this. I mean, obviously you're Batman. There's no way.
Oh, I'm fine. I'll take it. I'm honored. Thank you. You're obviously Superman. Yeah, there's no question.
There's just no way around it. I'm too nice. I don't know. I'm like, you know, I kind of feel like I'm like the Zack Snyder Superman more than I am the DC Comics Superman. And the reason why I say that is because when Zack Snyder Superman is very nice, he's very nice. But when he gets mad, he gets real. He explodes. Like, so that's what I feel. That's the kind of Superman. Let's not go too far into that.
Yeah, let's not.
Let's stay away from that.
You're Christopher Reeve, buddy. I'll just leave it at that.
Oh, really? Okay. All right. Well, yes. Maybe I'm misjudged. Now I understand the reaction because we're also looking at each other over Zoom, and the reaction on Jeremy's face was way more shocking than I thought it would be. Okay. Jeremy, let me ask you this. This is a Justice League podcast. Do you remember the first Justice League comic book you read, or do you remember the first Justice League run that like really impressed you, or what? Where's your connection to Justice League in the comic books?
Yeah, so the first Justice League comic that I read would have been during the airing of this show.
Oh, interesting.
So I liked comics and superhero culture as a kid and then kind of got away from it a little bit. And then as an adult in the time period after I left TU when I was away for a year, that's when I started watching this show. It was during the Cadmus arc of Justice League Unlimited.
Season 3?
That we'll get to. I think it's considered season 1 of Unlimited.
To me, they're the same show. We can have that argument. I bet we will have the argument before this podcast is over. But
I mean, there's so many different ways that you could class. I mean, I tend to look at it as all one big show.
And I do, too.
I would call the Cadmus arc season 4 is how I would consider it.
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
Because it's the last one before the Legion of Supervillains arc.
So this show specifically drove you to Justice League comic books, which is cool. Do you remember the run or do you remember who was working on it at the time?
So at the time when I started watching it was Infinite Crisis was getting ready to happen. It was the build up to Infinite Crisis. That's where I jumped on and like became current with DC Comics. But I am ashamed to admit I torrented a whole bunch of books.
Hey, that's
at
fine.
The time.
As long as you don't
I
do
was,
it now.
I was a poor young person.
Yeah,
I don't
right.
do it anymore. I don't do any kind of piracy of any kind anymore. But I did torrent basically every Flash comic from 1985 to 2005.
Would have been a big file.
It was, and I read all of them, and it was great. I also read Grant Morrison's Justice League run. I would say that's
The JLA run.
Yes, that's my team, like up through Superman Blue. Like
That is the same for me. Because at the time I was reading Wizard Magazine, which is this classic magazine of the 90s that talked about comic books, interviewed these creators, and they did a specific special issue, a JLA issue, talking about Grant Morrison's Justice League. And it impressed me. I loved the art. It also had Kyle Rayner, Green Lantern, who I'm a huge fan of. And I was in like Flynn. And I actually subscribed to that comic book because I was reading it in the late 90s. And at the time, no comic book shops anywhere near me. So I would get all these folded, bent over, torn apart issues of Justice League, but I still devoured them. And I also was kind of delayed with my JLA reading because when I got that special, I was very excited to get issue number one. But because I was in the middle of I grew up in the middle of nowhere, Kansas, the subscription didn't, or the, you know, the, because I actually put a $20 bill in an envelope and sent it to DC Comics. Like, give me my JLA. And by the time they got that with a stamp on it. Yeah. Man. My parents wouldn't let me write checks. Anyways, by the time DC Comics got that and was able to be like, give this kid a subscription, I got issue 7.
7 months.
It took 7 months in the turnaround time for me to get that. And but
and
I
this has
it.
Been your ad for Digital First.
Yes. We love brick and mortar stores. We love it. It's okay.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. But yes, I have because of that JLA run, that run has like really informed a lot of my perspective in the DC universe. So when this cartoon finally happened in 2001, it was catnip for me. It was perfection for me. It was exactly what I was looking for because I had, you know, already absorbed all the Grant Morrison Justice League. You know, it's interesting, Jeremy, we should talk about this. The next question I was going to ask you is why we decided to do this podcast and why a Justice League podcast. And it just dawned on me, we really haven't talked about this too much, but at the time we were recording this episode, you know, because you could be listening to this far, far into the future, several years down the road, we don't know. Hello, future people. This is the 20th anniversary of the cartoon. Mm-hmm. We are recording.
Coming up later this year.
We unconsciously started celebrating this 20 years later, which is kind of crazy. But
it really is.
Why did we decide to do this podcast? Why Justice League, Jeremy?
Well, I mean, for me personally, Justice League is never far from my mind. Because, you know, like
or
I said,
your heart.
Or my heart. you know, like I said, the Grant Morrison run is my favorite preferred comic version. But this show is what drew me back into comics. So in a very real sense, this is my Justice League. But are you getting at what we were thinking about doing instead?
Oh,
of
no,
this podcast.
There are no wrong answers, Jeremy. There are no wrong answers. Conversation is conversation. We should reveal that. I loved your anecdote. Jeremy and I have talked about doing a podcast for quite a while, and we originally were going to do a Star Trek podcast. And when I think we were actually like moving towards, okay, here's the reality of doing it. Like, let's make sure we can record. Let's make sure we can do all this stuff like that. Star Trek immediately became very unappealing. And I don't know why, but it was on a walk that I was doing one night and it just popped into my head and was like, why not a Justice League podcast? And weirdly about that, I have not seen these episodes for about 20 years since they aired. I did not see this cartoon in 2001. I think I saw Justice League not until like 2006, 2007. The show was off the air when I finally saw
it. Probably would have been around the time that we had met because I had gotten all of them saved on my hard drive and was watching them constantly.
I think I saw them on the DVDs but to be honest with you, I have not seen them in over 10 years. So I'm kind of coming to this show I forgot a lot of this pilot. So yeah, that is basically a lot of the reasons why we decided to do this podcast. And I promise you, listeners, we won't go this long every time. It's the first episode. That's why we got to open it up. We got to be wide. And let's get into this. Jeremy, let's talk about what is today's episode.
Today's episode is Secret Origins Part 1, originally aired November 17th, 2001. Synopsis: Superman and Batman team up to deal with an alien invasion, and a telepathic message leads the duo to a military base housing future ally John Jones. Secret Origins is the series premiere of Justice League. It originally aired as a full-length three-part movie, but streaming and reruns divide the episode into three parts, so that's how we will be discussing it.
That is correct. And before we get into the main episode discussion, we have to answer questions from the Super Friends. Yeah, that's right. We have some questions from our Patreon, and I know you're like, what? How could you have that question on episode one? Well, we asked the Patreon early, and they delivered. So, Jeremy, we have a question from David A. Skelton, who says, Jeremy, can you tell us a Jason story? And I feel like that's what we've been doing so far. But I was going to ask you, actually, do you have one that relates to Justice League specifically somehow? Or is that possible, Jeremy?
It's less to Justice League specifically, but more to, like, I think a foundational thing in our friendship.
Sure.
So, is the day that we took a road trip to go to the Action Figure and Toy Museum in Paul's Valley, Oklahoma.
I was going to ask you what the town was. I could not remember it. That was a fun day. That was a fun
day. It was
day.
A really fun day. Yeah. And it was just, and clearly, you know, that has inspired a lot in my life, because this was a guy who just had a toy collection and basically turned this retail space in downtown Paul's Valley, Oklahoma, into a recreation of his childhood home on the inside, and filled absolutely every room with action figures and dioramas. And
there are more action figures than
there. I've been trying to do that.
Oh boy.
Ever since.
There are more action figures than you think in that, everybody. Like, it is unbelievable. You can Google pictures. Jeremy, do you know, is it still open?
I don't know if it's still open.
Has it been
not.
Able to survive the Roni?
I you know, I don't know. I should look into it, though, because it's absolutely worth a day trip down there.
Well, I was going to say, like,
that's exactly what we did. We took a fun trip down there, and I, you know, I feel like that's a, we definitely bought things in the gift shop, I remember.
I think we did, because I think it was just leftover action figures. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Let me ask
and you, there was a lot of Justice League merchandise from this show there, too.
There was. Let me ask you this. Should the goal of this podcast, because, you know, if we're going to, there are 100 episodes of Justice League, 90 episodes, 80 episodes of Justice League, somewhere in there. By the end of the 80 episodes, is the goal that you will have your own action figure museum? It could, can that
not
be,
by
can that be the arc that. Of this podcast?
So this podcast is but a blip on my lifelong arc of becoming that.
Would you start?
It's going to take me a lot longer.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, start that museum in Tulsa as well. Don't do it in Mills Valley or Paul's Valley or whatever that place is.
Oh no, never in a million years. No. this will still, I think this has to be a house level thing for at least the next 5 years before I could get it off the ground.
All right. Got it. Well, there you go, David A. Skelton. Thank you for the question. I hope it answers it. All right, Jeremy, let's move to this week in Justice League history. It's the week of November 17th, 2001. What was happening that week, Jeremy?
In America, the number one song that week was Family Affair by Mary J. Blige.
I don't know.
The number one movie, you say you don't know it?
I don't know it. Don't play it.
I'm not familiar either.
Don't play
honestly.
It.
Honestly.
I don't think we can play it. I don't think it's legal to play it. Let's move on, Jeremy.
I don't have it queued up either way. And I will admit, this one I cheated slightly. The number one movie in the country, technically, on November 17th, 2001, was Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone.
Okay.
Because it opened the night before. The official box office totals didn't come in until the next day, but I looked at the day-by-day rankings, and it was the number one movie in America.
I think we can allow it.
Easily. Yeah. And then also happening on that day of note was the grand opening of the flagship Toys R Us store in Times Square that had a giant Superman statue and an indoor Ferris wheel. And one of the great regrets of my life is that it closed and I never got to go there.
So Toys R Us was aiming for a battle with FAO Schwarz, apparently.
So...
Because FAO Schwarz has that, well, not on Times Square, but FAO Schwarz is on like Fifth Avenue.
Yeah. But they were owned by the same people by the time that opened.
Oh, okay.
I don't know who owned who, but they were, so one was a subsidiary of the other.
It didn't matter. All right. Got it.
Didn't matter.
All right. Now we're going to move into a segment we are going to call Star Trek versus Justice League, because this podcast was really going to be a Star Trek podcast. We thought we'd chat about the one topic everyone needs to know about: who had the better episode that week, Star Trek or Justice League? So this week, Star Trek was airing the episode Star Trek Enterprise, that series starring Captain Jonathan Archer, the episode Civilization, Season 1, Episode 9. In that, the Enterprise investigates a pre-industrial civilization of about 500 million people after Captain Archer, Commander Tucker, Insensato, and Subcommander T'Pol arrive. They discover a local scientist who believes that a newly arrived merchant is causing a sickness in the town. Fun fact, the alien that is calling, that is the newly arrived merchant that is causing the sickness, is Wade Williams, who went to the University of Tulsa. So there's a weird connection to all us in this podcast. Jeremy, did Star Trek beat Justice League this week without giving us too many details in the Justice League episode?
No.
I agree.
No, it didn't.
No, this episode is not that. I'm sorry. That episode of Star Trek is not great. It's a neat idea, but I think Justice League definitely trounced the Federation this week. 100%. Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. You know,
although I will say it was nice to watch a episode that dealt with the ramifications of first contact in a pre-Prime Directive world.
Yeah. And Justice League did a lot of punching. So I think we know.
A lot more punching.
There's so many explosions.
Way better action.
Lots of monsters, all kinds of things. You know, actually, everyone out there, I just want to say that if you, you know, we could use sound effects for these in jingles, like a radio show, for every one of these segments. We have a lot of segments. Sorry. We just thought we were going to go crazy with the segments. We're going to make it happen. if you want to send us a segment, intro, or music, I'm just going to give you my info@jasoninman.com. There's better ones, but let's just go with that one. info@jasoninman.com. Just, you know, email it to my website. We'll get a Justice League Pod email maybe one day. So, Jeremy, let's go to the next section of the podcast.
Who's who in the DCAU? This is basically just where we talk about the people that made this episode behind the scenes.
Yes.
This episode was directed by Dan Reba. It was written by Rich Fogel, and I've chosen to spotlight Rich Fogel this week. He's an American television writer. On his lengthy resume are Super Friends, Smurfs, Yogi Bear, Flash Gordon, and Wildcats. Jason,
whoa!
I put that in there just for you.
Yeah,
he wrote
did.
On the Wildcats cartoon.
Oh, boy. That classic
Did
cartoon.
You watch that?
Wildcats? Yes, a lot.
I never watched it. I know virtually nothing about the Wildcats other than you love them.
All, you know, you can find every episode on YouTube, sadly.
Well,
it was a one.
Maybe
it was
that's a follow-up podcast to this.
Wild about Wildcats. Oh, it was going to be rough. Yeah, they only air for one season on CBS. Yeah.
Well, then I'll get through it quick.
Who else is in the cast? Who's the cast of this episode?
All right, so we've got Kevin Conroy, of course, playing the iconic Batman, Susan Eisenberg as Wonder Woman, Carl Lumbly as John Jones, George Newbern as Superman, Michael Rosenbaum as The Flash and also as a protester, Gary Cole as J. Allen Carter, Jason Marsden as Snapper Carr, Susan Sullivan as Queen Hippolyta, Max Brooks as Howie, Corey Burton as the bald technician slash doctor, Wanda Christine as the female technician slash SCU officer, Clyde Kusatsu as Japanese ambassador, Phil Lamar as general and Ed Rice, and Kevin Michael Richardson as General Wells and SCU officer.
So, fun fact, I don't know if you know this, Jeremy, but usually I'm not certain which guild voice actors are under. I'm pretty certain that they're not under SAG, but most episodes, when they bring you in for a voice part, you actually always record three different voices. That's the reason why you hear Michael Rosenbaum as a protester. Every one of these, I mean, you'll hear George Newbert. Kevin Conroy is so many security guards across Batman the Animated Series mm-hmm. and Justice League. But it's something about the union to where they'll just get them to fill in those one-line parts because that doesn't violate the contract or something like that. I'm not a voice actress, which is why I don't know the details, but that is the reason why you'll constantly hear, you know, Susan Eisenberg be 50 or three different. It's usually always three. One of the most well-known ones to me is there is a security guard in Disney's Gargoyles who begins the pilot. And it is 100% Keith David not really changing his voice at all. So then when you hear Goliath 5 minutes later, you're just like, hey, wait. So, all right. Now it's time to finally talk about what you all came here for. Justice League. All right. Let's dive in episode one of Justice League, Jeremy, with the mission briefing.
All right. We open in the Mariner Valley of Mars as two astronauts are searching for water beneath the surface. Finding what they initially believed to be an ice crystal, they accidentally open a fissure that J. Allen Carter falls into. He finds some ancient Martian ruins and a giant door that's sealed shut. Then, for some reason, he grabs a pickaxe and pries it open, only to be met by a blinding white light and what is presumably certain death. So, Jason, can we talk about how dumb these astronauts are for a second?
Yeah. I also remember thinking when I was watching this episode, that's a really big pickaxe. I was surprised that that was NASA standard issue, because that was a huge pickaxe. But yes, I also want to talk about, it's a little weird to me because this is the teaser of the episode. Yeah, he's absorbed by the white light, and then we go right to opening credits. And as a writer, I'm a big fan of teasers have to matter, because in a world of streaming where you're, and it's funny, in a world of streaming where there aren't commercial breaks, you're still doing teasers and act ones and act twos and act threes and whatever. You just don't cut to commercial. But when you cut to opening credits, it is a clear signal to the audience that, oh, now we're starting. Now the episode begins. And I hate shows with weak teasers, and I don't think this is a weak teaser. Like, I think this is actually a pretty good teaser, but the problem of it is I'm watching a show called Justice League, and none of the Justice League, not even one of them, are in this teaser. Only strangers are. And even though we meet one of the astronauts later on down the line, it's not really him. So in actuality, all of the characters in this teaser never appear again in the rest of the episode. And that's strange to me.
And on top of that, I don't like either of these characters that I've just met for the first time. The first one, you know, whenever the real J. Allen Carter is like, oh, man, look at that view. He's like, we're here to work. It's like, dude, you're standing on an alien planet. Enjoy yourself a little bit. Or at least, you know, don't be so bloodless where your colleague can't appreciate the view. But then also, I just think if you fall down a chasm and then somehow miraculously survive and then find a giant locked door with Martian writing on it.
Don't open it.
I'm just trying to get out of that cavern and make it back to Earth and let some archaeologists know. I'm not grabbing a pickaxe and prying it open and seeing what's inside.
Yeah. You know, when I was watching this, my first thought, because I forgot that this teaser is in Mars, my first thought was, we made it to Mars! I was so happy for, like, the world. I was like,
suck
yeah!
Suck it, Elon Musk. Yeah. We did it.
That's what I thought. I was so happy. I was like, science! Yes! so hopeful. All right, we have to. There is no way we can talk about the first episode of Justice League without talking about the opening credits.
The iconic theme song.
Okay, first off, I'm not certain who wrote that theme song. I can tell you real quick.
Lolita Ritmanis, I think.
Yes. There is some great music, by the way, across. I have the soundtrack for this episode. I'm bringing it up in my iTunes library. So if you hear her typing, I'm sorry. Oh, man, I just lost it. But there are some really, like, Justice League has some great music. And I adore this theme song. I think it's so good. Yeah, Lolita Ritmanis is the composer of this, the main first two season. I love it. I think it's epic. I think it's dramatic. I can remember vividly the first time seeing it and just being all in, being like, I am in. You've locked me for life show.
It really does a good job setting the tone for the show.
It seems so epic. Mm-hmm. Do you like? So I've heard this complaint before. I want to ask you, a lot of people don't like the first two season opening credits because of the low-res Justice League cartoony characters that are seen across it. What are your thoughts on this? The visuals.
My thoughts are Bruce Timm characters don't look good as 3D models.
Interesting.
Period. As much as I love the Green Lantern animated series, I don't think it looks that good. And I think that this opening credits falls into that same category. I'd have just rather seen a 2D animated thing with the same song, frankly. I get they wanted to do something different, but just for my personal taste, I think everybody looks abnormally clunky.
In
3D rendering.
I fully admit that they look low res. They don't look great. But I like that it's stylized. I love this version more than, because I don't like what they do when they just become clip show. I hate opening credits that are clip shows. I hate them. I hate them. So when they're just like, here's the Green Arrow clip and here's this and here's a push frame of a character that we cut out in Photoshop. So at least for this, for me, I was like, yeah, we are setting the tone. I'm a big fan of these original opening credits and I kind of hate when they go away. All right. So then there's a time jump. We go to Metropolis, right? And, we got to talk about, so Batman and these scientists, right? He's been following these scientists around and, you know, he's watching these scientists in the rafters. There's talks of a weird barbecue. And these scientists rip out a computer to get their secret alien tech. And my first thought was, you guys could have just put that in a locker. You could have just put it in the locker or you're dead. Like, why did you have to bury it in the wall? Lacquer,
hide a whole server in front of it.
Yeah, you're gonna have to rip out that wall every time you want to get to your alien tech, and that might just be an iPhone. And then, you know, it leads to a fight very, very quickly. Superman shows up, and Superman is giving Batman some sass here, which I want to play a clip from this because I thought, I thought this was a lot of sass for Superman.
Need a hand? Thanks, but I can handle this.
They don't look so tough.
They don't look so tough. That's a sassy Superman. What is up with you, dude? Is he having a bad
night?
He's
got a lot of undeserved sass in this episode, I think.
We're talking about Batman and Superman. It's great to start the episode with them because they are, the progenitors of this universe. They're the reason why Justice League exists because they both had Batman had 4 seasons, Superman 3 animated series, you know, to kick this all off. So I love that they're the first two heroes we see, but they both look slightly different. They're both a little bit redesigned. They don't look, neither one of them, Superman now has some lines on his chins. He looks to me a little bit older.
Mm-hmm.
And then Batman, he was in a completely black and gray outfit, and now he's in a black and blue, and his ears are taller. His ears are a little bit more Kelly Puckett. That's a very famous Batman artist. And you can definitely see the sort of purplish blue underneath his cape. I am not a fan of the Superman redesign. I'm a big fan of the Batman redesign. What are your thoughts on how they changed from their series, Jeremy?
Yeah, so I'm with you on Superman. I think they made Superman look too old, and you know they bailed out of it pretty fast. It's only this first season of Justice League before they go back to that original design. I don't mind the Batman design as much, but I gotta say my favorite Batman design is from the new Batman Adventures. I kind of wish they had just kept that style for Justice League personally.
Oh, interesting. See, I'm not a big fan of that design because the new Batman, is it the new Batman Robin Adventures? How do you call it exactly?
I think it's just the new Batman Adventures.
See, I call that one Batman the Animated Series Season 4, too. I'm like, that's Season 4.
It is. That is what it is. Yes, you're right. You're not wrong.
I thought all the designs in that made them too simple. Like, to me, it looked like that they lost their budget. They lost their animation budget. And they were like, we need to make these characters as simple to animate as possible. So a lot of the characters just become two colors. And that's what Batman. And so to me, giving him the third color of the blue with blue highlights, it makes him pop. It makes him look better instead of flat.
Yeah.
And I also will say that we're going to talk a lot about that. Future spoilers, listeners, with the Joker. Because the Joker in the Batman Animated Series Season 4, to me, I hate that design because he has just these beady black eyes and no lips. And I think the Justice League redesign is fantastic. I think it is the best look of animated Joker. So after the, you know, we get to this place where, they have a big fight. And I loved the Jimmy Olsen signal watch. I loved that. We get a reference to that. I don't even remember if the signal watch was brought up in Superman the Animated Series. I couldn't even remember that. I don't know if it is.
I couldn't tell you. I watched it in the last year, but honestly, I don't remember if it ever came up or not. I got to tell you, though, that's not one of my favorite moments of the episode, though.
Why?
Well, just the way that Superman offers him the watch, you know, and he says, like, you know, call me when you need help or whatever, as if Batman isn't the one who just had to save Superman from that situation because he collapsed 7 seconds after showing up.
Okay.
But then also, too, Batman really seems like he's just accepting it to not be rude. When Superman hands it to him, he doesn't seem like he particularly wants or needs it that bad.
Okay, so this is funny, and I think this is going to be a conversation that you and I are constantly going to have with this show. Because I think very clearly, especially, and I didn't, you know, this did not happen to me when I was reading the Grant Morrison Justice League, where, you know, they're all superpowered and Batman's the only non-powered one. And this is the same deal here. Every member of the Justice League has superpowers. Batman's the one without superpowers. Mm-hmm. And this show, especially in rewatching these first three episodes, is a constant reminder of, like, oh, Batman should not be in this fight. He is going to die. They are going to kill Batman. Or, like, every time Batman gets knocked out, I'm like, oh, he's dead. They killed him.
I think this show does that a lot, like over the course of it, even too. Really, it puts him in serious mortal danger.
It does, man, and I feel bad. Where, you know, it's one of those in the comic books. It's that idea where I love the idea that you're like, yeah, a normal human can be on that team of superpowered metahumans, but then when you see it in reality, you're like, oh no, they can't. Nope.
You can't really hang. Well, and then, of course, it all builds to the moment in Justice League Unlimited whenever Batman is falling through the sky and saying, I need some air support as I can't fly. Like, now, please.
Spoilers, Jeremy. Spoilers.
So far ahead.
You want to tell us about what happens next or bring up anything else, Mr. Jeremy? Yeah, I think we go to the United Nations, right?
Yes, absolutely. So we follow Superman to the United Nations, where we see Michael Rosenbaum voicing the nuclear protester outside. We see that J. Allen Carter has somehow survived his incident on Mars and is now a senator who has seemingly got his hands on a copy of Superman 4 and thought that the plot was viable. He wants Superman to rid the Earth of nukes and serve as a one-man global security force, which somehow the United Nations agrees to.
Yes, that is a, you know, it's so funny. It is the plot of Superman 4, the quest for peace, and I did not connect it until you just said it. That is a really bad movie. with the same shot of Superman just zooming at the screen. Yeah, so this is a little weird to me, and I'm going to say that I think this is only a plot convenience. That this is only, they wanted to do this to set up the reason why the world's armies couldn't help, and it had to
That's
be
exactly what it is.
And had to be a Justice League, but it's a little clunky. It's a little convenient, but you know, it's fine. I don't hate it. And especially when you think about, the ending about Superman, the animated series, because the ending of Superman, the animated series, even though there isn't a continuity with this series, right? Because sometimes they acknowledge it and sometimes they ignore it. Mm-hmm. But the ending of Superman, the animated series, is Superman getting controlled by Darkseid and kind of screwing stuff up and causing shenanigans. And it is weird that, let me ask you this. How much time do you think has passed since the Superman, the animated series? What do you think of the time jump is?
I think it's at least 2 years. I think I'm going to go by the 2 year time jump between like the beginning of this episode with them on Mars. I think at least that much time has passed.
All right, fair.
Since the course of the show.
Do you think animated Tim Drake is still with Batman?
Yes.
Okay.
I do. I don't think that we ever see him because of the bat embargo. I think they didn't really need to have him around until the point. And then by the point where they would have used him, they couldn't anymore. Because that starts a little bit later in the run of the show. But yes, I do think Tim Drake is still with him. Because we know during the timeline of this show that Dick Grayson is out nightwinging around.
I don't think they name call him in this show.
They don't, but he makes a cameo. He makes non-vocal. Oh, yeah. You will see Nightwing in Justice League, in an episode of Justice League in the background.
I don't remember that.
before Unlimited, even.
I'm excited.
It's in, like, season two.
Jeremy, you are exciting me here. I did not know that Nightwing, my favorite comic book character of all time, is in Justice League.
Yeah, they. I believe what happens is they go to Bloodhaven, and you see him standing on a building looking at them, and that's it.
What? Are you serious?
I'm dead serious.
I do not remember this. Can I?
I'll find what episode it is.
Can I rate the series 10 out of 10 already?
Yes, you can.
Episode one, over.
Wait, Nightwing is here? I'm on board.
All right, Jerry, let's keep on rolling, my friend.
All right. So 6 months on after this, Superman is destroying the nukes one at a time via heat vision, which really kind of lacks the visual flair of putting them all into a giant net and hurling it in the sun. But whatever. The public approves. But no less than the Flash is skeptical of Superman's ability to protect the world alone. And we learn all of this from a news report by Snapper Carr. Who is Snapper Carr, you might ask? Let's go check the Watchtower files.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
How do you feel like a morning
sound effect?
Hey, tell us about the weather, Jeremy.
Well, it's cold.
All right. So what is the Watchtower Files? What is this? We're talking.
The Watchtower Files.
Is it another segment?
It's a segment that we're going to do on the show from time to time where we highlight characters who make appearance in this show that have a DC Comics background that maybe doesn't get highlighted within the show. So we're going to talk about Snapper Carr, the news reporter. Lucas Snapper Carr made his first appearance in The Brave and the Bold in February 1960 as a supporting character to the Justice League of America. DC Comics executive editor Whitney Ellsworth not only insisted that a teenager be a member of the Justice League, but also that this teenager be hip. So Snapper Carr ran around as a sidekick, ne'er-do-well of the Justice League, snapping his fingers and presumably saying things like, "I can dig it," and "groovy, man."
I think...
Jason, am I too far off base with that?
No, you're pretty right, Ian. Snapper Carr is a character like Marvel's Rick Jones. And if you don't know who Rick Jones is... he's the kid that was in the trench that Bruce Banner ran out to save when he got hit by the gamma bomb. And I don't know how a human body being wrapped around a little kid saves that little kid from the same amount of radiation, but comic books.
Comics.
So Snapper Carr is kind of that same type of character, except for the DC Universe, because Rick Jones literally has a story arc with every Marvel character. And every time he shows up, for me, I've never been a big fan of Rick Jones. He just seems like a super fan of the Marvel Universe. And most of the time, he's annoying. And I think Snapper Carr is just as annoying. The only story that I think he's really good in is Mark Waid did a really nice retcon of him in JLA Year One, which was also the 12-issue miniseries about the first adventure of the Justice League that came out during Grant Morrison's ongoing series. And in that, when Justice League are gifted Happy Harbor, which is their first location or the first headquarters in the comic books, their engineer or their sort of fix-it man is Snapper Carr. I can't remember. They call him Lucas, and he is like the guy that maintains the building. And I always thought that was like the best retcon of him ever, and that explains like why he knows them. But I don't. You know what? I don't think the retcon of making Snapper Carr a news reporter for this series is a bad idea. I actually think it's a good idea.
I agree. I think it's a really smart choice because, you know, it's basically just a shout out. It's little more than an Easter egg, including this character, I feel like, as a shout to the past of the Justice League, but updated in a modern way. Because for real, why are you endangering this teenager?
Yeah. You know? Yes. And we will have to talk about this. And he becomes a walking exposition device. Whenever they need dump exposition onto the audience, boom, there it is. And I liked him when he first showed up, but I think this is going to be an ongoing thread of the Jason and Jeremy John about Justice League of my perpetual hate for Snapper Carr will just keep building and building and building every time he shows up.
Well, I think Snapper Carr is a perfectly nice member of the press who's just doing the best that he can. So we will talk about it.
I have no problem with the man. Lucas, you're fine. I don't have sad feelings, Lucas, but like you as a walking exposition device, we're going to have problems. All right, so let's talk about Superman's psychic vision.
Yeah, so Superman has another vague psychic vision lying in bed. And then we cut to Batman, who is tracked to the fake scientist to a warehouse where he discovers the bodies of the real scientists in alien pods. He is then attacked and bested by an alien guard dog.
All right, we're gonna talk about the alien guard dog right now.
I made notes about it, too.
The first thing, my first thought about that was, when I saw this alien dog, was the bum rap of the shapeshifter changeling alien dog that has to be the dog. So it's all four of you, right? You're all four aliens, and you're like, we must invade the planet. All right, I'll be scientist number one, you be scientist number two, you be scientist number three, and you, Gazorgazork, you're the dog. And you're like, wait, why am I the dog? You're the dog. You know, why does he have to be the dog? Why couldn't he be scientist number four?
So that was one of the first things I thought of. But honestly, I think that they have a species of pets, because when he shapeshifts, he's still in a different form than the other ones. So my question is just like, well, how smart is that dog to know like, oh, I need to look like this guard dog?
That is an aspect I never thought about. I never considered that could be a shapeshifter alien dog that they brought like Crypto. They brought it along. What a weird planet.
Because why wouldn't it just, you know, transform into a full-size Martian?
I don't know. The alien dog is weird. It's a weird
it's a weird moment.
It's, you know, for a cartoon, you're always doing things visually. You're always trying to do visual things, right? So, you know, I understand.
Someone wanted to sell a toy of an alien dog.
Yeah, or I understand that they thought kids would be like, oh, an alien dog. But when you think about it through story, it doesn't quite click. But for a cartoon, you're like, okay. And that is, I also think that is going to be an ongoing discussion with us because, you know, it's two grown men putting way more thought into a cartoon than probably anybody making it did.
And anybody ever should, really. Yeah. I just don't buy that a dog beats Batman, period. Alien or otherwise. Any dog this side of Apocalypse, Batman's got him.
You think Crypto, would Batman beat Crypto?
Crypto
the super dog?
I forgot about Crypto.
What about Streaky? Off the table. What about Streaky the super cat? Versus Batman.
I mean, Batman does have kryptonite on him at all times, too.
Yeah, but, you know, the kryptonite might affect different species differently. Like, I mean, I know they are Kryptonian, but it's a Kryptonian horse if you go with, you know, I can't really, is it Clip-Clop?
Comet. Oh, it's Comet, the super horse.
Yes, and I like Clip-Clop. I'm just going to travel back in time and retcon that right now. All right, so, you know, of course in Justice League, wouldn't be Justice League unless a giant meteorite shows up, and it leads us to a scene where Superman is like, I got to deal with this asteroid. Batman, I got to dump you off in a paramedic. And he dumps him off the paramedic, and the paramedic's first thought is, I'm going to see who Batman is. The first thought is not, holy crap, Batman exists. It's, I'm going to see who Batman is. And Batman, of course, stops and says, I think he says the line that I'm going to paraphrase, something like, I wouldn't.
Don't even think about it.
Well, thank you. What do we think about this scene? It almost, that to me felt a little cheesy, a little bit like, how many times are we going to unmask Batman? What did you think about the paramedic and Batman scene?
So I like it as a Batman moment. Uh-huh. I like that he's injured and barely conscious and still has the wherewithal to catch someone's wrist before they unmask him. Mm-hmm. I like it in that context. It doesn't make much sense just as an event that happens in the plot of this episode, because it really makes it seem like all Batman needs to do to recover from any injury is just lay still on his back for a few minutes and close his eyes. Because the paramedics don't actually do anything to treat him. He stops her from taking his mask off. Yeah. And then the end.
He suffers suffers in silence. Because
if you won't let me take the mask off, I don't know what you want me to do.
He's our faithful guardian. He's our dark knight. Dun, dun, dun. You know, like, I don't know whether that monologue was. So we got to talk about the design. Out of the meteorite, comes this giant alien tripod. And our good friend Snapper Carr has this to say about it.
Hey,
That's the alien emergency, everybody.
Incredible. Is it some kind of machine?
Snapper Carr, what the hell do you think a machine looks like? It has goo on it. It has skin. It has spots. It is moving like an animal. What do you think a machine? Now, I know that it could be a biological machine. Yes, I understand. But as soon as I heard Snapper say that, I was like, Snapper, you dummy. And that was broadcast live on the air in the DC universe, by the way.
I think that maybe he just went there because he saw it, and visually it reminded him so much of War of the Worlds that he assumed it had to be a machine.
Yeah.
Because these aliens are clearly cribbing a little bit from War of the Worlds with their tripod design, too.
Yes, I was getting that a lot. This is very classic, old school War of the Worlds, which that is one great thing about this whole animated series is that Bruce Timm is not afraid as the producer here to let his influences, to point them out he's not subtle about them, which I don't think you can be subtle in a cartoon, which maybe explains, what we're talking about, the alien dog, like, I gotta be the alien dog. Yes. I'm sorry. I still think about the guy that just got the short straw, like, oh man. And don't forget,
there was a time and a
go ahead.
There was a time and a place for subtlety, and that was before the Zeta Project. So that's out the window with the DCAU now.
Jeremy, what? Okay, I'm gonna admit something here. I've never seen an episode of the Zeta Project, but I know what the Zeta Project is because it was a spinoff of Batman Beyond, the other animated series. Did you watch the Zeta Project?
I haven't seen all of the Zeta Project, but I saw a handful of episodes as it was airing.
What are your thoughts on the Zeta Project?
I'm actually planning on rewatching it in my overall DCAU rewatch.
Did this just become a Zeta Project review podcast?
Maybe I'll have a segment later on or something where I give you a quick 2-minute recap of the Zeta Project.
Jason and Jeremy zipping about Zeta Project. Zip zapping. I don't know what that would be.
The whole DCAU is fair game, really.
Well,
we can do what
you know
we
what?
Want.
I was going to say this, that, and this is very pie in the sky. Literally, this is episode one, everybody. We didn't want to plan it. But, I'm very much about letting the listeners in this podcast guide us. So we're at least going to do Justice League. And if we, don't hate our guts and love Snapper Carr in 4 years, where we go from there, who knows? We could go Batman, we could go Batman Beyond, we could go Superman. I'm also open to, if a DC animated movie comes out while we're recording this podcast, maybe we pause Justice League and we do that for that month. I'm open, because I do, even though they are disconnected, I do sort of like all fold them, even Batman Brave and the Bold. I sort of like weirdly fold them all into a continuity, even though I know they're not in the same continuity. But that's just out there. So
they share some DNA, to be sure.
They definitely do. All right. So, Jeremy, tell us about Superman fighting this tripod.
Superman engages the tripod, but is sidelined by a direct blast. Batman has just been resting his eyes on the stretcher long enough for the Batwing to show up, and he enters the fray, but to little effect. Superman gets back in the fight, but is again blasted into a building where a massive wall falls on him, where Snapper Carr, God love him, attempts to pull Superman from the rubble as though he could do anything but wait for Superman to free himself from the building on top of him.
Okay, so I want to talk about we haven't talked about them very much. I want to talk about the psychic blasts. Now, there's some really clever stuff in it that, if you notice, they're sort of in Martian Manhunter colors.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a couple times where you can spot John Jones, the Martian Manhunter's face, in an outline in a couple of them. And, it flashes by so quick that I think a normal viewer would never, ever catch that. But I really appreciated it. Although, again, for story purposes, by the time we get to the third blast, you're a little annoyed by it. You're like, really, again? And again, when I bring these up, listeners, this is not me saying, I actually really enjoyed this episode. It's me noting the differences of how you write for a cartoon to how you would write for another show. And it is that thing of like, oh, they're doing it again because we got to make sure we got the kids' attentions, which is so funny because to me, I would have told you right at the gate that like teenagers are watching Justice League. not, you know, kids right off the gate. I'm certain a lot of kids watch it, but you know, for me, I think it's a little bit of a more, it's a bit older. It's a teenager cartoon is what I would say.
Yeah.
But I wanted to talk about that. And the psychic vision leads to Superman flying away for good. And I don't want to talk, I'm going to save that for another segment that we have.
Okay.
So Jeremy, Wonder Woman enters.
Yes, we get a very, very brief scene of Wonder Woman. We see her and her mother Hippolyta on Themyscira discussing how things aren't looking good for man's world at the moment. Hippolyta seems more or less indifferent to the situation, saying men's world can fend for themselves, and Diana is kind of shocked by this behavior.
Classic Hippolyta.
Really, it is. It's classic Hippolyta.
This is,
and classic Diana loving everybody and just wanting to do whatever she can to help.
This is the world that we live in now. And, you know, some might argue that this would be the definition of iconic. I don't know. Throughout this entire scene, my mind constantly was like, when are we going to hear the Wonder Woman theme? The da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Like, I kept waiting for that to come on. I was getting those Wonder Woman first movie vibes.
Like,
and
Is She With You is so dramatic and powerful that it should have rippled through time and made its way into all Wonder Woman media, basically.
I agree. I was just like, I was waiting for the do-do-do-do. Like, constantly. I was like, where's that cello, man?
You just want it all the time. I agree with you. Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about Batman's, you know, following of Superman. Superman flew away, basically, and Batman does what?
Yeah. Batman sees Superman fly away pretty much right at the same time that the army shows up and starts blasting the tripods with their missiles, which, much like Batman's missiles, aren't really having very much of an effect. So he follows Superman to a remote army base. Where he finds Superman smashing through some doors. He throws a batarang to get his attention. And before we go too much further, I just want to talk about for a second how dramatic that is. Well, because Superman has super hearing. Batman just throws a batarang for dramatic effect. I get it. You've lived your whole life that way. You can't turn it off. I just think it's funny.
Alfred! Alfred! He's always like, where's my food? Alfred!
Shink! Yeah. Battering flies into the wall next to your head.
You don't have to be loud, Master Bruce. Alfred! You know, this again, and I didn't even have this in my notes. But this again screams to me that this is a cartoon. They did this because it would visually look great.
Absolutely.
And I think I've noticed a lot of trends that is like sort of sparking my memory. We're going to be talking about a lot of exploding batarangs, I think. Of exploding batarangs. Because that is a lot of what Batman does in this show. But you are correct. You know, Superman does have super hearing, but it also makes you wonder and worry about super ear loss. And, you know, if he gets a loud explosion next to his ears, does that mean that he's going to lose his, does he hurt from the very large explosion next? Does he hurt? I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with this. I'm worried about Superman's ears.
I think that even though it would be loud and unpleasant for him, the vibrations wouldn't be strong enough to actually break a Kryptonian eardrum, would they?
I don't know, man. I don't know.
Man, and we may never know, unfortunately.
Bruce, Tim, where's this episode? Let's go. We know you listen. I wish you listened. By the way, I've met Bruce Tim several times, and I don't mean this as a name drop, but I will tell you, I used to, before I officially met him, I used to work in, when I used to work for Rhett Link, we had the studio in Burbank, and I remember one day, going down the street because I didn't have very much time. I went down to Carl's Jr. and I grabbed, a quick thing at Carl's Jr. And Bruce Timm was sitting in a booth reading a paperback novel. And I didn't bother him because I'm very respectful. I'm like, oh, you don't bother people when they're eating. You just move it. But I knew it was him. And so there you go. And I was that was the first time I ever saw him in real life. And it kind of spooked me. I was like, oh, hey, there he is. So Bruce.
You're a living legend.
Yeah. Bruce, let me I'll buy you some Carl's Jr. Just let me know. All right, Jeremy. So let's. What happens at the end of this episode?
All right. So we are finally introduced to the source of Superman's psychic visions. Our second new Justice Leaguer of the episode, the Martian Manhunter. But we will never call him that in the show. So John Jones it is.
Is that true? They never call him Martian Manhunter?
I don't want to say never.
Okay.
But if it happens, it happens once or twice. He is almost always just called John.
Jeremy, I want to have this conversation right now. You're a big comic book fan like I am. And this is, I won't name the shows, but this in some recent shows and superhero media, it is another thing about the character's code name. And it's a big deal. I don't like in modern sort of superhero storytelling that, especially in live action or cartoons, it is a big deal of how do we explain this goofy name? And I always think that I'm always the fan of just cut to a newspaper or just have somebody be like, oh, what, man, we should call you the Martian Manhunter, like really jokingly. And then boom, we know for us as the audience, we know immediately that that's their code name because we're not dummies. We know what Wikipedia is.
Mm-hmm.
What do you feel about this? What do you feel about that? They do not call him Martian Manhunter. I mean, what do you think about this modern? It seems impossible to give a superhero their goofy code name now.
So I feel like Martian Manhunter, John Jones, gets to almost be the exception to how I usually feel about it. Because I'm with you. It doesn't matter what the code name is. Throw it on a newspaper. A reporter coined it. Someone said it as a joke. But when you are the last of your kind on a brand new alien planet and you're pretty publicly a superhero as far as these things go, you don't have a secret identity. You don't really need a code name in the first place. Mm-hmm. I think it's more weird that he would be like, you guys should call me something else.
I believe, and I could be wrong about this, I want to say in the Grant Morrison JLA run, they retconned it to... That was his rank, is that he was a Martian Manhunter in the military or the police force on Mars.
See, that makes a lot more sense.
I'm fine with that as well. All right, so John, he traveled to Earth to warn us of an invasion, correct?
Yes. He showed up to warn us, but he was captured, not believed, by the government.
Typical.
Batman. Typical. That's what Batman says. He is not shocked at all. But Batman is still distrustful of John Jones. So John changes into some shorts and a cape, and that solves that problem, apparently.
Very high collar.
Very high collar. Iconic design. Then as they leave, they are confronted by soldiers who won't let John leave the facility. Superman makes an effort to vouch for John, but that doesn't work as the soldiers are really alien creatures, which brings us to our very first Cliffhanger Corner.
What? Another segment?
Another segment.
I love it.
This is the best segment,
though.
We're
going to keep adding segments. I love it. I want the podcast to be nothing but segments. Well, that's
just segments all day.
Just segments all day. All right. So what is Cliffhanger Corner?
Cliffhanger Corner is where almost every episode of Justice League ends with a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Or I should say every other episode of Justice League.
Yes. So
this is where we're going to just talk about those and not rank them necessarily, but decide, is this a good cliffhanger? Is this a bad cliffhanger? How does this stack up to other cliffhangers this show has tried to pull on us?
Well, Jeremy,
I'd
like to give you the honor of starting off the very first Cliffhanger Corner. This is a momentous occasion. What do you think of the first cliffhanger of Secret Origins, the very first episode of Justice League?
I think it's pretty good in that, it leaves you with a sense of danger. You know, we don't know what's going to happen next. But I think it's kind of bad in that, don't you think that psychic Martian should have, been able to warn Superman? Oh, hey, by the way.
Yeah.
Those are a bunch of Martian soldiers.
Yep.
Why is he letting Superman try to have a conversation with him? He should know.
So first off, before I rank the cliffhanger, I want to talk about, I love that John, he looks like his normal alien form. He has a triangle head and he's a little bit more monstrous. I don't think he actually looks that scary, but that's just me.
Yeah, no, not really.
And then he's like, let me pick a form that you'll trust more. And he picks underwear with an X cross and a high collared cape. And then he's still green. He still has red eyes. He still looks alien. But he thinks that that is a form. And I know that that's the classic comic book form. But like, again, it's one of those things where I was like, and it, you are correct. I love that design. But to be honest with you, I was kind of like, your regular alien design is fine. It's okay.
Yeah. And I mean, in some ways, less scary because it's are you wearing backward suspenders with no shirt and shorts? Like, I'm not scared of your look. I'm just scared of what your personality is like.
I'm scared of your design choices. Yes, that's what I'm scared of. So to talk about the cliffhanger, I don't mean this to be that Jason, I kind of feel like this has been Jason like picking apart the episode.
That's kind of what we're doing, sort of.
That's the point. Thank you, Jeremy. We are jawing about Justice League, and we can jaw about anything. I actually think Superman leaving the battle is a little bit of a stronger cliffhanger because, you know, the soldiers showing up. So let's say the soldiers are not aliens. That could be the cliffhanger of the episode as well. I would totally buy that as a cliffhanger that the U.S. government was like, hey, don't take our alien. We need that guy. We want him to do more experiments and probes. But the real point of the episode to me, or the real which is what a cliffhanger should be, is when Superman just flies away from Metropolis, especially since they show him flying past the burning Daily Planet.
Yes.
Which happens in this episode. That to me, and Batman being like, where are you going? Superman, to be continued.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I also at the same time understand this is a show called Justice League. And at this point, we've seen three Justice Leaguers, although Flash is really a cameo. And I think they were like, we got to have at least half the team, because literally 10 minutes later into the next episode, we're going to have, the full team show up. But whatever we think, and I know a lot of people out there might be like, well, this was originally aired as one giant episode, but I guarantee you they wrote this as three separate because they knew it was going to be split up. And then they were like, okay, well, how do we, combine that together into one big story? Because again, every one of these episodes does have that cliffhanger right at the half hour mark, which means they wrote them as so. So I'm going to say that I don't think this is a good cliffhanger. Are you a vote for yes?
Yeah, it's certainly not my favorite. I don't hate it or think it's an especially bad one, but it's definitely not going to reach some of the highs that later episodes of the show will reach.
Yeah, I agree. All right. And that is it, because we're not going to rate the episode, because that is for, we made the call. We're going to leave the ratings for the conclusions.
We're going to rate overall stories instead of individual episodes.
Exactly. So the next episode we'll be covering is Secret Origin Part 2, obviously. And everybody, we just want to tell you thank you for listening. And if you want to leave us questions for the next episode, be on the lookout for a post asking for questions at patreon.com/Jawin. That's JAWIIN. Jeremy, if they want to find you on social medias, are you on the grams? Are you on the Twitters? Tell them where they can find you.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at JLAwesome, and then you can find me on Instagram at JLAwesomeEst. And also, because I forgot to do it at the top, I want to do a quick shout out to the DCAU Wiki. Is an incredibly useful resource for this, and that's where I pulled a lot of my cast lists and episode synopsis and stuff like that. So thank you to the people that run and moderate that. It's my new favorite website.
Nice. All right, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Jawin, at JAWIIN. It's the first two letters of all three of my names. And if you want to check out any of my comic books or books, go to jasoninman.com. Thank you so much for listening to episode one of Jason and Jeremy Jawing About Justice League. I'm Jason.
And I'm Jeremy.
And we have jawed enough about Justice League.